Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
Intense bombardments. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. Welcome into Wednesday, July 30th. Glad you're with us. Here's what's up this hour.
Hamas says at least 15 people were killed today when a shelter for Palestinians was hit by explosions. Israel says it's investigating. We'll take you to Gaza City for the latest.
Will Russian President Vladimir Putin now be more cooperative or dig in more deeply? Hear the latest round of sanctions adopted by the West against Moscow.
Walking in shin-deep water on the UCLA campus after the bursting of a water main creating a 30-foot geyser. Serious damage is done.
Without legislation from Congress, President Obama plans to address illegal immigration on his own, possibly issuing fewer deportations.
The president has said in the wake of the failure of Congress to pass any sort of immigration reform bill that he's going to take executive action on his own. For a long time, he was really signaling that would be a modest action, he and his aides, I should say. But really now we're talking about something much, much bolder, much broader.
Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Meckler on the White House options being weighed for illegals. She's here in about 20 minutes. 15 people have reportedly died today after explosions struck a United Nations school being used as a shelter for displaced Palestinians. That's according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Hamas is pointing the finger at Israel. Israel says it's investigating. Meanwhile, in a sign of just how heavy Israel's recent bombardment of Gaza City has been, an airstrike damaged the territory's only power plant yesterday, leaving many of the 1.8 million citizens without electricity. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Casey says the military escalation is designed to force Hamas to choose between losing control of Gaza and yielding to Israel's terms for a sweeping disarmament. He's with us from Gaza City on the T-Mobile hotline. Nicholas, catch us up to date.
Well, this morning we're learning that there was an attack which took place at a school that was being used as a shelter by the UN. The Gaza Health Ministry says that it killed 15 people and is saying that it was Israel that struck this place, as there were people there who were displaced, that had lost their homes, and were just seeking shelter. The Israeli military says it's trying to look into what happened. It's not saying whether it was responsible or not. But regardless of who did this, this is the second time that a school that was being run by the UN as a shelter has gotten attacked. The last time this happened was last week, and 16 people died there when they were actually trying to leave the school to seek a safer place and waiting for, they said, a bus to come and pick them up.
Was it suspected that perhaps missiles were being held inside this building?
No one said that. There have been other schools where there had been missiles that were being stored. At the same time, it was very clear to anyone that would have struck the place that this was a place where there were displaced refugees and hundreds of them. The Israeli military knows where all of the schools are. They've said so much. And so does Hamas, because they're the ones who are in the area. So they know where these schools are. They know that there are people who are women, children, displaced people that don't have any homes. And these schools right now are very packed and should not be part of the fighting right now.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Casey in Gaza City about the latest Israeli bombardments there. Explain to some of the bombardment from late yesterday in which this power plant was hit.
Yeah, so in the early morning yesterday, Israel struck a bunch of different targets throughout the Gaza Strip. And so far, they have been saying that their goals in this attacks have been to undo the system of tunnels that Hamas has and also attack rocket launchers. Now, these attacks that happened yesterday were a lot more widespread. They hit the home of Ismail Haniyeh, who is the head of Hamas in Gaza, and they also struck at the power plant. The reason why the power plant is really important is because Gaza doesn't receive much energy aside from this plant itself. It used to get some energy from Israel. That's been cut off because the power lines have fallen down in the fighting, and this power plant in Gaza, which supplied about 50 megawatts of power to Gaza, is now gone, and that's leaving Gaza, basically large parts of it, without power, and those that don't have generators most likely won't have any power until repairs are made. That could be months from now.
Some of these explosions got real personal for you yesterday, correct? Did a hotel window got blown out?
Yeah, they were pretty awful, actually. The military decided to launch a very large attack around the hotel about 5 a.m. yesterday, and the explosions were deafening. The entire building was shaking. We, for a while, were worried that something might collapse in the building because it was moving so much and it's built on sand. It blew out windows. It knocked out the electricity for a while, and it just sent these reverberations through the air that made it even hard to breathe when this is going on. They dropped about four different bombs in the same area, which were very large, much larger than anything that we've heard so far throughout the war.
So are there places for you to bounce around to and take cover?
No, the hotel is basically it for the journalists. At a time like that, it's a really bad idea, obviously, to go outside. But there aren't bomb shelters like you have in Israel in the Gaza Strip, and there's no warning system, there's no air raid system, and there's also no system of intercepting any of the attacks that are coming down on us here. So the best that we can do is really put on our flak jackets and get near a wall.
Thanks, Nick. Wall Street Journal reporter Nicholas Casey from Gaza City this morning. 12 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Being in global sales, I never know where my job will take me. The last thing I need to worry about while traveling is outrageous data charges. That's why I switched to T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business plan. I get unlimited text and data in over 100 countries at no extra charge. No multiple SIM cards or international data plans. I just land, turn on my phone, and it works. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only. Subject to change. Capable device required. Standard speeds approximately 128 kilobits per second. See T-Mobile.com for details and included destinations.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday. The U.S. and the European Union have adopted new and sweeping economic sanctions against Russia for events in the conflict with Ukraine. Here's Secretary of State John Kerry.
The Russians and their so-called volunteers are continuing to ship arms and funds and personnel across the border. We see this. There's clear evidence of it.
The question now for the West is whether this escalated move will make Russian President Vladimir Putin more cooperative or prompt him to dig in to Brussels now. And Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton. Matthew, what's new with this round of sanctions?
Previously, they'd just been targeting individuals who were deemed responsible for the turmoil in the eastern provinces of Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea. So this is a significant escalation of their attempts to isolate Russia and Vladimir Putin internationally. They're trying to undermine the Russian economy. They're trying to undermine Russian companies. And it remains to be seen whether this will work.
Why is this happening now, Matthew? What's changed?
Well, the crash of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, when it was shot down by Ukrainian separatists, was a clear turning point. This really swayed a number of governments that were sitting on the fence about taking a tougher line with Russia to join the hawkish camp and decide to move ahead. Although it should be said that the EU and probably the U.S. was already heading in that direction before the crash, simply because it appeared that they made the assessment that Mr. Putin was continuing to allow weapons and men to flow across the border from Russia into eastern Ukraine to the separatists.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton in Brussels. Why was this such a difficult decision for the EU to make?
It was, although the sanctions are relatively narrowly targeted at the moment. They're targeting some Russian state-owned financial institutions. They're targeting European exports of militarily sensitive equipment and arms to Russia. These are not areas that are going to make a major difference in the EU's economic growth. Now, it remains to be seen how Russia will retaliate. They could do something really drastic, like stop gas shipments to Europe. That would be, I think, at this point, Russia is not prepared to take that step, since it would probably harm Russia even more than it would harm Europe. But this is nevertheless a difficult step for the West after more than 20 years of engagement with Russia following the Cold War. This is the first real step backwards.
Any indication that these new sanctions will make a difference?
Remains to be seen. I think most people expect that at this point, Vladimir Putin cannot back down. In the face of these sanctions, I think that the Russian military involvement with the separatists is seen as too deep. Russian domestic support for what Mr. Putin is doing right now to support the separatists is very strong. Ukraine is a huge issue in Russia. And the support, the public support for Mr. Putin's what some would call belligerent stance in eastern Ukraine is very strong. So the incentives for him to step back are I do not believe there yet.
Thanks, Matthew. Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dalton with us today from Brussels. It's 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. The embattled VA has a new secretary as the Senate confirms Robert McDonald. The Journal's Ben Kessling tells us more.
Mr. McDonald has, by all appearances, good credentials. He's a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. He was a paratrooper in the Army, then had a 33-year career at Procter & Gamble.
The U.S. and the EU have okayed major sanctions against Russia to punish it for the Ukraine conflict. Meanwhile, no let-up in deadly fighting between Israel and Hamas militants in Gaza. Some 1,200 Palestinians now reported dead, almost 60 on the Israeli side. Quite a mess at UCLA as a pipe burst, sending millions of gallons of water across campus, deluging athletic facilities, including the famed basketball arena.
We know that the damage is going to be caused by standing water on this hardwood floor.
L.A. Fire Captain Jamie Moore, firefighters had to save several people stranded in underground parking garages. The arena just underwent renovations less than 2 years ago. Amgen says it's cutting its global workforce by up to 15%, or around 2,900 employees. Plans to close facilities in Colorado and Washington State as it focuses on new drugs, but will expand hubs in California and Massachusetts. Today brings the initial take on second quarter GDP. We also get ADP's July payrolls tally. In the meantime, stock futures are higher after a lower close. We have a Fed announcement today, and actually there are a lot of economic reports this week. Investors not doing too much. The Dow fell 70, the S&P slipped 9, the NASDAQ 2. Heavy drinking when you're younger can raise your risk of memory problems later in life. New study found people with a history of drinking problems by the time they're middle-aged are more than twice as likely to show memory issues later. Animal rights activists were not pleased when Pirate King Restaurant in Beijing hired teenaged girls to walk live crabs down the street on leashes. The idea was to bring attention to the new menu. The restaurant manager tells a British news site the crabs didn't suffer for long because they were quickly thrown into a cooking pot.
Ah, I see. Wow.
By the way, have you ever eaten soft shell crab? That's a kind of a popular food item in the New Jersey and Maryland and
On occasion.
Delaware areas.
Mm-hmm. I'll take any kind of crab. Any type of seafood, any type of shellfish, yes, I love it all.
But the soft shell crab is a little bit different because you're eating the entire thing and crunching down into it, right?
Right. As long as it's got butter, I can handle it. 23 minutes after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. For months, you've heard President Obama say there were limits to his power to protect illegals in the U.S. from deportation. But now, since House Republicans won't take up immigration legislation, the Wall Street Journal says he's considering broad action to scale back deportations with help from things like work permits for millions of people. Reporter Laura Meckler has the exclusive story on the change in White House thinking. Laura, what do we know?
Well, what we know is that the president has said in the wake of the failure of Congress to pass any sort of immigration reform bill that he's going to take executive action on his own. For a long time, he was really signaling that that would be a modest action, he and his aides, I should say, refining who is a priority and who is not a priority for deportation, for instance. But really now we're talking about something much, much bolder, much broader is what he's looking at. So For instance, he's considering whether to expand a program that right now gives work permits to young people who are brought to the country illegally as young people, maybe expanded to their parents or to the parents of U.S. citizens. Those are some of the things that are being considered.
Why has he shifted in this direction?
I think that part of it definitely has to do with the fact that Congress has, not been able to get this done. So now he's like reassessing what are his actual options now, in the wake of that. He seems to be looking at it through a different lens these days.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Meckler. What's been the Republican response?
Well, Republicans don't like it one bit. I mean, they think that they already think that the program he already put in place was overreach. So they definitely think anything more would be overreach. So even in anticipation of this, we're already hearing complaints from Republicans.
So does he see this as two separate issues, Laura, or is he trying to come up with one solution?
Well, really, there's two separate issues here. You know, he's taken a very sort of strong they've got to go home stance for the kids who are coming, these recent people who are just coming in the, you know, recent days, weeks, months, and a different point of view for people who have been here for a long time. The idea is that people, you know, kids who are sympathetic, obviously, and there's a, you know, real humanitarian needs for these kids. But at the end of the day, they are going to be deported if they don't qualify to stay. He doesn't want to encourage more to come, among other reasons. So he sort of has a different point of view for the people who have been in the country for a long time.
Does President Obama have any limit to this power?
Well, there certainly are limits. The question is where those are, and we don't really know yet.
Thanks, Laura. Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Meckler. So in a series of meetings with immigration advocates, faith leaders, and experts, senior White House officials, she says, have asked how the administration might structure an expansion of that program, such as who might be included. One possibility under discussion is to protect people with children who are U.S. citizens. That group numbers about 4.4 million, according to the research group National Foundation for American Policy. Another option here is to include parents of existing participants in the Deferred Action Program. That group is estimated to range from about 500,000 to 1.1 million. Other options include defining the group based on length of U.S. residence or employment status. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Trying to keep up with your workload when you're constantly out of the office for meetings can seem impossible. That's why millions of professionals use Citrix GoToMeeting. Meet with clients, coworkers, even new prospects without having to leave your desk, saving you time so you can get more work done. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone from any computer, tablet, or smartphone. Talk face-to-face with HD video conferencing while sharing screens to collaborate on documents, spreadsheets, and presentations in real time. Schedule meetings in advance or meet on the fly without the unnecessary time and expense of travel. GoToMeeting allows you to work smarter, more efficiently, and take more control of your time and resources. Try GoToMeeting today and see how it can make a difference for your business. Don't wait. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code WSJ. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code WSJ.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Good Wednesday morning. It is July 30th. Thanks for spending time with us. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Some of the stories we're following: 15 people dead at a UN shelter housing Palestinians in Gaza. New sanctions against Russia. Parts of UCLA underwater, plus the power of doodling and white-collar criminals as paid speakers. You'll hear the unique qualifications in about 20 minutes. Clinical trials that are vital to developing new drugs follow a central principle. Researchers and patients must both be blinded as to who is getting the experimental drug and who is getting a placebo or standard therapy. If patients know who has the drug or learn too much about how others in the trial are faring, it could influence how they report symptoms and make it hard to tell whether the drug is working. But the blind are being jeopardized by social media these days. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Amy Doxer-Marcus. Amy, explain the trend.
Well, the thing that is concerning many of the pharmaceutical company executives and some of the scientists and researchers is the sharing among people who are enrolled in the trial and others who have the same condition who may be considering enrolling in the trial So there's two kinds of issues. One is that if you share a lot of information with each other, you can influence how someone perceives how they're feeling too. And so there's worry that if you say, oh, I have a headache, someone who may not have thought they have a headache suddenly feels that they have a headache too. There's also the potential of influencing other people who have the same condition and are looking at all the information and trying to judge whether they want to join a trial or not. They may be influenced one way or another. And finally, the other concern is that one of the principles of most clinical trials is that people shouldn't know whether they're getting a drug that's experimental or they're getting a standard therapy or they're getting a placebo. And in many cases, information that's shared too widely allows people to either guess or at least think they know, even if they don't know for sure.
So what are the researchers doing to fight this?
Well, it's very complicated because nobody wants to say to somebody, oh, you can't talk about what you're feeling or experiencing. So some of the different things that they are doing is they are creating some video material that explains to people how important it is to be careful about what you share online. They're contemplating potentially creating a sort of moderated discussion area so people can share, but perhaps there would be a third party observing and kind of weighing in if they think the sharing goes too far. And they're also trying to work more closely with patients to take their insights and even their needs and desires into account when designing the trial in the hopes that they'll feel more of a full partnership and will understand when their sharing might threaten the gathering of data.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Amy Doxer-Marcus. Has this been a problem for a while, or at least since the beginning of social media?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, it has been a source of kind of growing concern, and certainly social media has been around for a while, but I think that it's being even more sort of intense interest to growing numbers of pharmaceutical executives, both because the sharing now is so widespread. I mean, while maybe, you know, years ago there were early kind of adopters who led the charge, now pretty much everybody shares everything, you know, and blogs are being done by anyone. So it's just being more talked about as the sharing gets even more widespread. And there's a growing sense that while it might have been easy to ignore this some years ago, now it doesn't make sense to ignore it anymore. It needs to be addressed more clearly.
Thanks, Amy. Wall Street Journal reporter Amy Doxer-Marcus. 21 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for joining us. If you could please put this on your to-do list, the new WSJ radio app. Download it for free from the Apple App Store for iPhone and iPad. Brings the latest episodes of this program, the Wall Street Journal this morning, and all of your favorite journal radio shows. Also new and free, the MarketWatch Radio Network app for iPhone and iPad at Apple's App Store. Remarkably good stuff.
And oh, yeah.
We've come, I must say, a fairly long way, digitally speaking, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this app is really cool. Not something I've come to expect from Wall Street Journal Radio, where we've been fairly low-tech for some time. This is really
that's a nice way to put it.
Right,
I guess.
It's a nice way to put it.
Yeah,
this
it's come,
really
come
cool.
a long way, and it's great. And it's, again, you can share the stuff all over the place. Anything you like, you can share it with all your friends. It's fantastic.
And
so definitely check it out.
And it's also worth checking out the Jennifer Aniston lookalike, who
yes.
is the model for the WSJ radio app.
We did a good job with that as well.
Yeah, we take no credit for that. You didn't pick her, did you?
Wasn't me, but whoever did.
Oh, I was going to say, if you were behind the scenes on that, I would need to know. 18 minutes in front of the hour. The Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Gavin here now with a look at some of the stories that we are following for you today.
Well, Gordon, we continue to keep an eye on the latest developments in eastern Ukraine and the Gaza Strip. Back home, Congress is trying to wrap up their last week before heading out for summer recess with a bang, or at least less of a whimper, as the House unveils a $600 million bill to help deal with the influx of Central American children and families crossing the border. New York City is mulling over whether they need to have tighter control over the character impersonators that roam through Times Square after a guy dressed up as Spider-Man was arrested for allegedly punching a police officer recently. The new mayor of New York thinks that these characters should be licensed, but that could be easier said than done. Legal experts say licenses and background checks could violate free speech rights. And we know that we've done stories in the Wall Street Journal about that the theater district has been hurt by this.
Yes.
People don't want to walk through that area anymore because of these characters, which have just exploded now over the last couple of years.
This one recently involving the Spider-Man,
yeah.
I believe the story for him, or if not him, one of the other characters, was that somebody went to take a picture.
Yes.
Right, and you tip these guys. That's how they make their money,
right.
You know, a buck or whatever. I think the character said something along the lines of, like, I only accept five.
I think it was $10.
Tens or twenties.
Yeah, I think it was he demanded $10 yeah. for a picture.
Gotta be kidding.
And that was the problem. So, yeah, it's becoming a bigger problem every year. And, Gordon, do you live in the snobbiest small city in America? Well, good news for you. There is one New Jersey city on the list, but it's not yours or mine. Movoto.com, a real estate research and brokerage site, recently ranked more than 300 U.S. cities as to what they consider the smallest but snobbiest locales based on 2010 U.S. Census data. Snobbish factors include having the highest median household income, the highest median home values, the largest percentage of the population with a college degree, having a good deal of art galleries, private schools, and performing arts locales, and the fewest fast food restaurants. Hmm. Palo Alto, California comes in number one on the list. Palo Alto, as you know, the Silicon Valley home of Stanford University, as well as Skype and Tesla. Palo Alto, just one of five snobby California cities on the list. Perhaps not surprising, Gordon.
Well, you know what? I don't know enough of Silicon Valley to speak for that. I love Stanford University.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know the snobbiness factor on campus.
Right.
There.
Well, one person's snobby town is another one's really nice town.
Right.
So
right.
I guess it depends on your taste. Other snobby spots include Brookline, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, Bethesda, Maryland, a suburb of D.C.
Definitely Bethesda. Yeah. Definitely Bethesda, yes.
You've seen a few noses
all
turned up in
Washington
Bethesda.
All those Washington elites. Oh, please. Right.
And Hoboken, New Jersey, the home of Frank Sinatra, located just a quick train ride across the river from Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah, what you have with Hoboken, for those not familiar with New Jersey, right, as you said, it's the quick train ride, what, a mere mile or two, perhaps, from Manhattan.
Right.
And you got all the recent college grads there, or at least at one time they were, who got jobs in New York,
yep.
but couldn't afford to live in Manhattan,
right.
so they were in New Jersey.
Just slightly cheaper than Manhattan. And by the way, a bar every 2 feet.
Yes, right.
I think there's a square mile, and there's like 100 bars in that square mile right. town of Hoboken.
Very intensely concentrated. Very
yes.
good. Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
As the owner of a delivery company, I have to be in constant contact with my drivers, the warehouse, and my customers. Between scheduling appointments, using GPS, and tracking orders on our smartphones and tablets, we were going way over our data limit every month. That's why I switched to T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business Plan. My company gets all the data we need without worrying about unpredictable overage charges. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change.
Hey, glad you're with us. When you're listening to a boring presentation at work or listening to a conference call that's of little relevance, do you tend to doodle on your legal pad? At one time, that might have been frowned upon. But Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger in Portland says new research finds that doodling can help you focus, ease your patience, vent emotions, and even generate an aha moment. Sue, what are we learning?
Well, for a long time, people thought that doodlers were just idling, wasting time, but a growing number of scientists are looking closer and saying it's really a thinking tool, that the doodle can actually serve as kind of an extended playing field for the brain, helping you focus, helping you improve on your ideas, just helping you stay on track.
Okay. Doodlers, I guess, come in all shapes and sizes, right? It's not, because I feel like sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. I'm not a consistent doodler.
Well, right, and I think you have to be in a certain mind state and have the freedom to be able to do that. I think you may be doodling words, people, faces, landscapes, design. Some of the doodlers I interviewed did very elaborate images, repetitive images, and others just did like shapes and scrolling figures. But in any event, it usually is a way to keep your mind at an ideal level of arousal. A study in Lancet in 2011 found that it really helps the brain remain active at the most effective level by engaging the default networks of the brain to keep it just busy enough to concentrate.
Oh, that's interesting. It keeps you just sort of alert enough.
Exactly.
Okay,
and
one
2009 study that's been often cited found that if people were encouraged to doodle while listening to a monotonous list of names on a voicemail, they remembered 29% more of the information later when the researchers gave them a surprise quiz. So there's something about it that helps you stay in the present and focus.
I should have doodled more in college.
Me too.
I didn't realize that. Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenberger. 9 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Will the Twitter doubters stop chirping? We'll see, as Twitter just posted strong quarterly results, including its second straight quarter of accelerated user growth. McDonald's could be treated as a joint employer along with its franchisees in labor complaints, according to a legal ruling by the National Labor Relations Board. This decision could crimp a company's ability to claim that it's not responsible for labor actions of franchise partners. Consumer confidence posts a nice bounce this month, but Conference Board economist Ken Goldstein says we need to see even better results.
Remember, the Great Recession ended 5 years ago, so this is still relatively low in terms of consumer confidence.
U.S. stock futures are trending higher this morning after a bit of a lower close yesterday. The Dow was down 70, the S&P slipped almost 9, the NASDAQ lost 2. Doug Roberts at Channel Capital says broad sanctions against Russia, one thing weighing on investors' minds.
Sanctions and restrictions on trade, that kind of affects business in general. What is weighing on people's minds is that maybe some of these restrictions on trade could actually hurt corporate earnings, hurt the economy.
Asian markets were higher today. Now, today we get the initial estimate of second quarter economic growth in the U.S., among other things. Ebola claims another doctor's life in Africa, this time in Sierra Leone. Health workers are especially vulnerable to the virus that's killed more than 670 people in West Africa this year and infected hundreds, including two American aid workers. International observers have been turned back from another attempt to reach the site where Malaysia Air Flight 17 was brought down in eastern Ukraine. The team is being kept away amid safety concerns and hindrance from the separatists who control the area. Amazon, in a new blog posting, is framing its dispute with Hachette as a fight to bring you lower ebook prices and writers more money. But the Authors Guild says lower prices are not necessarily the best thing for the writers. And a car dealership in Jacksonville, Florida, reversed course, issued a $300 refund in bills to an unhappy customer, but not before sending a message. Channel 7 TV says that at first, part of that refund was made in $85 worth of pennies.
Whoa. Really? That
would be a little difficult to carry home, although I guess you could put them in your new car. You'd have to have a wheelbarrow to roll them out to the vehicle.
That sounds like there were some real tensions there, whatever happened in that case. Thank you, Gina. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Just because you're a convicted white-collar criminal doesn't mean you can't get work. There's always a speakers bureau called The Pros and Cons. MarketWatch points out that crime, in fact, does pay. Up to $5,000 a speech. They're hired by companies, schools, or churches that want to hear about fraud prevention. On the list of available speakers, guys like Sam Antar, the former accountant who helped perpetrate one of the largest security frauds of the 1980s at Crazy Eddie, a chain of electronic stores based in New York. Or you could book Vernon Beck, former Air Force pilot who took a job with Texas Petrochemical, where he set up a fake company to embezzle $13 million by invoicing work that was never performed. To join the Pros and Cons Speakers Bureau, one first must be convicted of embezzling money, committing securities fraud, or simply using company checks to pay off a personal credit card. Oh, and you have to be out of prison. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Thanks for listening to The Wall Street Journal This Morning. For more, follow The Wall Street Journal This Morning on Facebook and Twitter, and now on TuneIn.